Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boys Lip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Gamma's Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
DonCole.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Hello. Oh, we're on. Hey,
we're on.
This is Mike. Yeah, this is Mike. Ron, we are on All About Wine tonight. Edit that. Here we go. Welcome to the show.
Sorry, I missed you last week. I was bawling my port. I had to get that done. I had pre-sold a lot of it, and I had to get it into bottles, so I was busy last week bawling my port. So sorry I missed the show last week.
If you have never tried, and maybe some people haven't even heard of a strawberry port, it is fantastic.
Thank you.
I would recommend give you credit. Anybody out there, it's the bottle's unique itself. So, you know, order it, get the bottle, enjoy it. The wine is fantastic. It's a strawberry port. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just delicious, and it goes with everything, or it goes well by itself as well. So,
yeah.
Give them a call at the Florida State's Winery and inquire about it. Maybe order some, and there's the information on the website as well, including what we're going through right now. Go to FloridaStatesWines.com and check out the Our Wines section, and there's also the order form on there to order wines for your particular area. Or you can call, of course, 813-996-2113. Check out the whole wine list, but the strawberry port is definitely unique, has a great flavor. Everything about it is great, and definitely worth a try. So check it out. And if you're in the area,
Thanks.
Stop by and do a wine tasting. There you go.
Yeah,
so we have We have that, and we do have a guest tonight, and I believe I will – I can't see my clock. This thing – there it goes. I will go get our guest and be right back with her in a minute. Hold on just a second. Thank you.
Very good. All right. And thanks, Mike. I don't know if he covered it last week or not. the week before that, we were just talking about him being able to come in and jump in and be able to take over the show, but I don't know if he did or not. Our guest tonight. Is Elizabeth Snyder. She is the author and she'll tell you everything else, but the Wine for Normal People book. She is the author for Wine for Normal People. She's involved with a podcast program. Wine for Normal People is an award-winning podcast for people who want to learn about wine. And she says, wine without the attitude, which basically, when I talked to her, we agreed that we're both probably approaching wine about the same way. We both are into the aspect of wine just so we can both spread it out to people and make it less intimidating. So that's really, you know, we've agreed that that's really what wine is all about. She has. She's going to be on with us tonight. She's in Atlanta, actually, is where she called me from, originally from New York. So when Elizabeth Snyder gets on the program here, we will have her tell us about Atlanta and the storms up there and all that stuff. For all you people around the country, some of you may be in cold weather already, but, you know, down here in Florida, anything... It's been wind blowing today and 62, 64 degrees, and it feels like it's in the depth of winter for us, but I don't know. I see Elizabeth is standing by. We'll bring you on here. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you with us. So I was just telling the listeners out there that you are up in Atlanta now and facing all that horrible weather.
Well, you have to understand, I'm a New Yorker, so I don't think this weather is that horrible, but I think the reaction to the weather is a little horrible. So it's a little bit different, yeah. Not necessarily that the weather itself is that bad, but what has happened as a result is a little funny to me.
No, I can imagine it would be. I remember years ago when I was growing up, I grew up in Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, and I remember years ago a cousin of mine got married, moved down to Texas, got up one morning, there was about an inch and a half of snow on the ground. He wrapped up his kids and sent them out the door to catch the bus to go to school. And they were out there half hour and came back and said, no bus. And he goes, why? And they said they called off school, and he couldn't believe it. So
that's just about what happened here. Actually, school was canceled for rain on Tuesday. That was a new one.
That's all.
So it is what it is. As I say, you know, I'm taking up space in Atlanta until someday I can move back to the homeland. But, you know, I'm here for my husband, MC Ice, as we call him on the podcast, for his work. And then when it's my turn, we'll move back up north. So that's
there you go.
The compromise.
What part of New York?
Lots of nice people in Atlanta. I'm from Long Island, but my parents are from the city. So I spent a lot of time in New York City, you know, just and in Brooklyn, because that's really where my family's from.
No, we've done a couple of shows on Long Island, the grape yard, the vineyards and the wineries there around Long Island. That's really
yeah. Well, I remember great wine now, but I remember when they were first getting started. I don't mean to date myself, but it was not received very well by Long Islanders at first. They were ripping up potato farms. I'm from the North Shore, which is where most of the wineries are, and I'm actually only from about, you know, maybe 30 minutes west of where the wineries are now. But when it was first starting out, it was a couple of guys and women just trying to play around and see if they could make vineyards work there. And the early results, I mean, I'm sure that there was better stuff than what we had exposure to, but I know my parents were nonplussed about it and used to make fun of it. And now I think it's great. I've been out several times. My mom still lives on Long Island, and we love it. I think the wines are getting better every year.
And we, you know, we've talked to them up there, and some of the wines they're putting out of Long Island is phenomenal. It's just, it's amazing what they are doing with the wines there. And so, yeah, you're
there's
right.
There's some good stuff. Yeah, there's some good stuff. They've got some good sparkling. They're moving more towards some of the Bordeaux varieties, which I think is a good idea. I think some of the Merlots I've had from there have been excellent. And
yeah.
Although, for my money, I would say that Virginia is where I think the East Coast wine hub really is in the United States on the East Coast. I think Long Island, and the Finger Lakes is great, but it's more of a one-trick pony because they can't really grow the variety that something like Charlottesville, Virginia, or even parts of Northern Virginia can grow. Still, I think Long Island is doing a great job, and I think that they, if they can increase their production just a little bit so other people can get it, then I think they'll do better business. So I'm proud of my roots.
One of the things that I think stuck with me more about Long Island when I was talking to him, I asked one of the wineries as I was talking to him one evening if he was ready to harvest, and he goes, no, he said he was ready to net. And I hesitated. I said, net. What? And he said, they are in a migratory bird path, and they have to net the vineyards or else the birds would eat all the grapes.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. They are right in a migratory bird path. And actually, when we were in elementary school, we used to go out to there's a couple of parks, you know, just nature parks, and we would watch some of that happen. So that's very true. That makes a lot of sense, and especially being close to the water, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I just, you know, whenever, and it's funny because whenever I talk to anybody from New York, we start talking about wine in Long Island, I always mention that to them, and no one seems to realize that. No one seems to think, oh, netting, yeah, well, that would make sense, and same response you gave. So that's one thing that stuck with me about Long Island wines. Virginia, you got me at a disadvantage here because we haven't talked to Virginia yet. We're on our T's. We've been talking to Texas off and on over the last month or so, but we haven't gotten to the V's. So Virginia is something new to us. We haven't had a chance to interview any wineries.
I'm a huge fan.
Are you?
Yeah. I haven't had Texas wine, so there you go. I have not. You know, the thing is, and you understand this too, is that unless you have a connection to some of these more localized regions, for instance, for me, Long Island, because my family is there, it's easy for me to get out there, and so I've had the wines from Long Island. And also, if you go to New York City a lot, they have been able to sell, the Long Island wineries have been able to sell a lot of their wines to restaurants in the city, and the same with the Finger Lakes. The issue, though, is that when you get into an area like Texas or Virginia, and I get emails all the time from people saying, please, please, please come to my wine region, please, I would love to take you around, I'd love to blah, blah, blah. The problem is that unless it's kind of big, it's very hard to get those wines. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't have access to any Texas wines here at all.
Do you have
access unless you know somebody? Yeah, no, and Virginia's the same way. Unless my father lives in D.C., so we had occasion several times to go to wineries in Virginia, and also they serve Virginia wines all over D.C., so that makes total sense. But here, I can't get those wines, and neither can anybody else in the country. I think Virginia, more than a lot of other regions, has potential to expand production, and they already have some places that are a little bit bigger in terms of production, so they may be able to ramp up to levels that are slightly, will allow them a little bit broader distribution, but I've never had a Texas wine. I've never seen a Texas wine. I haven't traveled to Texas in a few years now. So I don't know. That's the real trick to all of this.
And I think you hit on a good point there in the fact that that's a trick to all of it, because every time I've talked to wineries, most of them are sold within the state. There are so many great wineries out there, but they're not exporting. They're not, and I don't mean exporting overseas. I mean just exporting beyond their state borders. It's just not happening.
Well, you know, I'll business dork out on you for a second because, you know, I told you that I work for a very large winery and I have an MBA, so that's kind of how I got into the wine world, that I got recruited. Mm-hmm. I was already passionate about wine for years and years and had been taking courses on my own. I never knew that I could get into the industry this easily, I guess, but I wound up working for a large winery doing marketing, and that then, you know, from henceforth have been, you know, I quit and wound up doing my own thing. But one of the real challenges that some of these wineries have is the extent of getting the permits and getting the approvals from states to be able to sell wine within the state or be able to ship wine. And
right. This,
I think you said that you had spoken to the guys from Free the Grapes, and they're big into this all the time. They talk about this all the time, about the problems surrounding the interstate commerce, even though the Supreme Court has ruled that it's not legal to ban people from shipping things within, you know, to different states, it still could be cost prohibitive. So what a lot of wineries do, and I'm not sure from a business perspective that this is the best strategy, and I've talked actually, especially in Walla Walla, I had this conversation when I was out there, Walla Walla, Washington, about how everybody always wants to be in New York. That's what they want. They want their brand in New York. And they feel like unless you have your brand in New York, then you're a loser. And I think
really?
That actually that's, yeah, New York is one of the hardest states to sell. First of all, it's one of the hardest legal, from a legal perspective, one of the hardest states to receive authorization from to be able to sell your goods. They're very strict. And then once you pay all that money to get to be able to ship into New York or to be able to sell at local wine stores in New York, then you have to deal with all the noise because everybody wants to be in New York. So how could you ever stand out? I think it's better to go to
right.
a place like Raleigh or, you know, a market where there's lots of sophisticated people, but it's not so crowded. I don't know. But, yeah, I think that part of the reason is that a place like a smaller winery in Virginia or in Texas, they have to go through all this legal rigmarole in order to be able to get authorization. And then once they get it, I don't know that their sales numbers really pay for what they actually had to go through. I don't know. But it is sad.
Well, yeah.
We're not going to be able to – I don't think it's ever going to change.
You know, it is slowly changing, though. Here and there, you're hearing new things happening and all that. And, you know, different wineries are being able to ship different places, and it's all that. But so many of the small wineries – and let's face it, I mean, most of the wineries in this country are small operations. They're, you look
got
at
it.
The big ones are maybe, you know, less than 10% of the overall number of operations. They might have a lot of sales, but the number of operations. And so all the small wineries can't really do this major shipping here everywhere. And it's sad because there are some great wines. We mentioned Texas, and I have to bring this up. I talked to a guy in Texas a couple, 3 weeks ago, I think it was. And Wine Enthusiast magazine just came out naming the 10 best wine regions in the world, and the Hill Country of Texas was one of them. And my guest was a guy from the Hill Country, and I mean he was bubbly. He was so excited about that, which is you know, you can't blame him. I mean, that, what a coup! it was great.
Seriously.
Yeah.
No, that's a big deal to get that kind of press. But again, I just hope that they can increase their production a little bit so the rest of us can enjoy that, because it's hard. I mean, it's even hard to get stuff from, you know, I mentioned Walla Walla, from some of the smaller areas in Washington. And Washington is the second largest wine producing state in the United States.
Right.
So if they're having problems, what is going to happen with some of these other up and comers? But hopefully, I think that the answer to that is really direct shipping. I mean, you have to seek out the winery and then get on their wine club list or make an order, and that's pretty much the only way to do it.
And that's right, and that's about the only way you're going to be able to do any of this stuff, because there are so many small ones, and every time I talk to a small winery, they say, well, we can ship to here, but we're restricted out of here, and we can't do this, but we can do that, and, you know, and it changes all the time. And so if you get on the list, if you start, you know, contacting them, there are some wonderful wines out there, though. It's just really sad that there's not more of a distribution system that we can try a lot of these great wines that are available in different states.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a real double-edged sword, because one is that you have to know about these places, right? I mean, so you've got to be able to speak it out. And so In a world where, you know, I mean, I do wine for normal people. You're all about wine. We're both trying to help people feel more comfortable with wine because for so long, and I would say even now, it's such an exclusive thing, and it's very hard. Wine is not an easy topic at all. It's a difficult topic because it changes from year to year. It's farming, and then it's also chemistry, and it's how people use different, different tools at their disposal to make wine taste different. And then, you know, once you get over to the old world and you start dealing with Europe, you really have to start knowing, okay, I don't know what grape is in Sancerre. So then somebody's got to tell you that, and they've got to tell you what to look for. And so it's Sauvignon Blanc, by the way, in case anybody's listening and they wanted to know that. So once you get into this, it becomes more and more confusing. So we deal with that level, and then to go ask people to seek out local wineries is very difficult, especially if somebody's trying to learn and what they're trying to do is get as much experience as they can underneath their belt. So they want to try everything. And so to ask somebody to get on a wine club list is very challenging. However, some of these smaller wineries, that's how they have to do it. You got to get on the club, so you have to order a few bottles a year in order to be able to get access to their wines, which, you know, for some people that's not great. So I don't know. I think the wine industry has much to sort out, and I just read, I think there was something like there's 8,000 wineries in North America.
Yes,
I mean, it's staggering.
Right around there, yeah. Half of those are in California.
Yep.
You know, we can go on and on, which is true. The people need to get out there. If you have local wineries, if you're on a trip or something, stop by and visit wineries. It really is the best way to do it. Tell us how you hit on it lightly while we were talking there for a minute, but tell us how you got started into doing what you're doing, and tell us about the Wine for Normal People and what that entails, and give us a little bit of your history here, if you will.
Sure. Well, here's the thing about me, is that I really am a totally normal person, even though I'm in the wine industry. So, you know, I like pop culture. I like pop culture. I had a life before I got into wine. I guess that I got started in wine. My father was, I didn't have a real wine drinking family or anything like that. But my dad, as I got older, really liked Italian wine. And he always used to talk about these wines. And I have an older sister who's a few years older than me. And we wound up, after I graduated college, I wound up moving to Boston, and I did not work in the wine industry. I worked for Reebok for a year, and then I worked for a high-tech market research company, which was a great, great company, but I just wasn't that interested in the topic. So instead, my sister and I took, in Boston, it's such a real academic town. You can take a class in anything. So we decided that in order to be able to communicate with my dad and also not feel like total jerks while we went to the wine store, we decided that our best option was to take a class from the Boston Center for Adult Education. And we didn't know, we had no idea what this class was going to entail. We assumed that because it was from the Boston Center for Adult Education that it was just going to be some stupid wine tasting class, because we kept going to all these wine tasting events, which I don't know, because you're in the industry, and I don't know whether you go or have gone to these wine tasting things, but
all the time, yeah, all the time.
So not even as a personality in wine, but just as a person, like, you know, you go and there's a salesperson and they're telling you about the wine, and they want you to know very specific things about the wines, and then they want you to buy the wine at the end of the event. But you feel like when you walk out of there, you don't know anything about wine. You just know something about that wine.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Usually the way it works. Yes, I do. I know. Yeah, that's just the way it works, too. Yeah.
Right, it is. So that we kept going to these things, and we would be like, and sometimes you'd pay money to go to them. Sometimes they were free, but a lot of times you would pay money to go to them, and then you would walk out of them scratching your head saying, I don't get it. I still don't know anything about wine. I still don't know anything about Europe. I don't know anything about going wine shopping. So we took this class, and it was amazing. There was this guy, I'll never forget him as long as I live, his name's John Miller, and he was working for a distributor, but he was completely neutral. He did not have any bias, and he taught us about wine, the fundamentals of wine, how wine is made, why wine has the flavors it has. Here's old world wines. Here's new world wines. Here's old world white. Here's bubbly. Here's fortified wine. He took us through, I think it was about 6, maybe 8-week course, a ton of wines. We got to taste so much stuff, and I remember having an Alsace Riesling. It was a Trimbach Alsace Riesling, and thinking and looking at my sister and going, this is wine? This is really, I didn't even know wine could taste like this. So we wound up really thinking to ourselves, this is a world that is pretty cool. And so instead of doing what we used to do, which was we would get off the T, because everybody takes public transportation, of course, in Boston, or a lot of people
right.
do. We'd get off T, and there were two liquor stores between our house and the T. So you'd walk into the first one, and if anybody asked you a question or tried to give you wine to taste or, asked you if you needed help, you would quickly say no and walk out as quickly as possible because it was just too much. What were you supposed to ask, right?
All right.
And then we would go into the other one. The other one was do or die. You had to get something. So even if somebody asked you a question, that second store, if you made it to the second store, you had to buy something and you just buy off price. This wine class opened us up to different things, and then people started treating us differently in wine stores, and we really started to feel like, okay, this is a very interesting pursuit. So when I decided to go to business school, I actually wrote my business school essay about getting into the wine industry and how I thought I was going to have to work in consumer packaged goods for a really long time before being able to get into wine. I had no idea how to get into wine. I didn't know that most people get in through sales and all this kind of stuff. And while I was writing my business school essay, I decided to take some time off, and I lived in St. John in the Caribbean and waited tables at an Italian restaurant.
Wow.
So I learned more about wine. I learned more about how to sell wine. I learned about what kind of questions people have about pairing, all of this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of great firsthand knowledge, and then went to business school and worked in the wine industry and saw the very ugly side of the wine industry, which,
yeah, it is.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a side
the dirtiest
that people don't see.
Legal business.
Yeah.
No, it's one of the dirtiest legal businesses, right?
Right. People don't see it. People, don't see that end of it. But, hey.
It's vile.
But we learn to live with it.
You do learn to live with it, but, all of the preferential treatment, people buying TVs so that their wines can get on the floor, those case stacks in the grocery stores, that's all bought and paid for in one way or the other, in trips, in incentives, in discounts. And it just is, it's not fair because a lot of the best wines never see daylight unless you go to a smaller store where people are pickier. But it is very, very sad to me how the industry works. And then production, from large-scale production you were talking about before about, it is few operations, but the scale and scope of this production is just absurd. I mean, it's concrete tanks and giants. They're not even, they could be making anything. They could be making apple juice. So it was disheartening, and also even within the winery, I found that the way that people treated the consumer, as they call it, or just people buying wine, was really not good. They don't think of people as humans. They think of them as taste profiles. They think everybody wants the same thing. They're not willing to educate people except to the extent that it will help them sell their product. And it was very disheartening for me. So I wound up doing a training program for servers, for waiters and waitresses, because this large winery actually did not have a very large presence in the on-premise world, as they call it, or the restaurant world. So they were trying to get a bigger presence, and we wrote this training program, my boss and I, and I was like, this is what I want to be doing. I want to be teaching people about wine in a way that's very accessible. And it was a survival guide to wine. It was very tongue-in-cheek, and we produced videos, and it was very fun. And when it was over, I quit the winery and decided to start Wine for Normal People. I started a blog. I started a wine education company. And then it turned into a podcast, which we've been very fortunate that we've been award winning, which is great. Won a couple awards and nominated for a podcast award this year, iTunes Best New Arts Podcast, and all this kind of stuff, which is, has been great. Wonderful listeners. And then, you know, I got signed by an agent to write a book, so Wine for Normal People, the book is coming out. Hopefully, I'm almost done with the first draft, and then we will be hopefully publishing that at the end of this year. So
Wow. Lots
going on. And, and TV appearances, radio appearances, all that kind of stuff, and public speaking around the country. So it's been very fun.
And we have to also mention a 2.5-year-old in the house.
Yes, I do. Right, I know. I don't actually, you know, it's funny. I never talk about, my husband is my co-host on the podcast, but we never talk about the 2.5-year-old. And I've got another one on the way, actually, right now.
Yeah.
Too, so.
Well, congratulations.
Yes, yeah, I do. Thank you. We're done.
Yeah, well, you know, you'll see.
promise you.
The 2.5-year-old is definitely a part of it all, so you can't ignore her. I mean, you know, that's a big part of the whole thing there. So, wow, what a story!
Do you have children?
Yes, I do. I have two. I'm at the point now where I even have grandchildren. So, which is a thrill and it's fun.
You stopped at 2, though. See, 2's the magic number, I'm telling you.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. So, but
any more than 2, you're outmanned. I mean, I don't know how people do it. I have a lot of respect for this. I have a couple friends that have 3 kids, and I think you're just outmanned. I don't know how you do it.
You can't win. I mean, when they start doing votes, you're always outvoted. You know, I know. It's bad enough with having 2, a boy and a girl, when I was, you know, and I raised them by myself, so that was even.
Oh my gosh!
Almost always outvoted there.
but you can have some control over 2. 3 would have been
impossible.
Absolute disaster.
It would have definitely would have. So your podcast. What is this consist of? What are you doing on that? And how can people tune in to you?
Well, Wine for Normal People is the podcast. It's available on iTunes and all of the other places where downloadable podcasts are available, Player FM and Stitcher and all of the, there, you know, any of the, and it's Podbay, all of that stuff is they all have feeds. And Wine for Normal People is essentially what I said. You know, the mission that I started with was that I really wanted to help people understand wine on a fundamental level. And so whereas I think you do a great job of helping people understand the stories behind wine and do lots of interviews, I do fewer interviews, and it's more about actually the dorky part of wine. So about wine regions, about grapes, about winemaking techniques, about pairing. We just actually released last night something on versatile Valentine's wine, so wines that will last all throughout the meal, because a lot of people don't want to order multiple bottles of wine or go by the glass. They want to order one bottle that will take you through the meal.
True.
So, you know, things that are practical and that are helpful in terms of understanding wine on a basic level, so that when you do go to events or when you start going into the wine store, you don't seize up. I mean, some of the greatest emails that I have received, or that I receive on a you know, fairly regular basis, or on Facebook, and we're at Wine for Normal People on Facebook or Twitter at Normal Wine, are things that say, you know, I went into the wine store today, and we just got one from somebody that said, I went into the wine store today and I felt completely overwhelmed, and I thought I didn't even know what to do. And then I just took a step back and I thought about your podcast on California wines. And I thought, okay, Sonoma. Okay, I'm looking at Sonoma, Russian River Valley. I remember that. I'm looking at Sonoma Valley. I know what that means. I'm looking at Central Coast. I see Monterey. I see Paso. Okay, all right, now I feel more comfortable. Now I'm okay going to the wine store. For me, that's total success. That's what we try to do, is just help people feel a level of comfort that they didn't previously feel.
And you know, and that makes a big difference too. That's one of the things I try to you know, bring forth on this program too, is wine is not intimidating. Wine is something just to kick back and enjoy. And you know, if it starts getting to the point where it's intimidating, then you really do need to take a step back, because there's no reason for it to be. I think, you know, and one of the things I think is wrong with wine is the fact that people have the image of what we see in movies or on Frasier. I mean, that's that type of stuff. They take it as real stuff as opposed to really what it is, just tongue-in-cheek joking. And it's sad that people are so intimidated by it. So, you know, that's sounds like wine for normal people is trying to break that trend a lot there.
Yeah, that and it's trying to, yeah, I think that really people have, there are a lot of people that have a real attitude, exactly what you're saying, about wine. And so even, but I think this also goes back to the fact that, for instance, in another industry, it's not very hard to figure out how to get into an industry, right? So
right.
If I wanted to get into technology, I would figure out what I needed to learn and then who I needed to contact, and that would be that. But even if you think about somebody who is new, how would you get into the wine industry? It's so weird how you would get into the wine industry, because you might have to go work in a retail store, even if you have multiple degrees and you're a lawyer making a job transition, and you might have to go work in a wine store and really start to understand how wine works on a fundamental level before you're able to go work for a large company, for instance. And I think that is a very unique and strange thing about wine. It is kind of a black box in many ways. And I don't know. I mean, I think that there is, like I said before, I don't think that it's so simple. I think that there are a lot of things to learn if you really want to know about it and not just guzzle it. And so I take that very seriously. But at the same time, I don't think that it's anything that any normal person, an intelligent person who, you know, has – most of the people that are interested in wine, I think, for the most part, are – they tend to be educated. They tend to be interested. They tend to be open to liking things that are not just – you know, they're not just one thing. They want to look, okay, well, you know, I learned about California, now maybe I'll learn about Spain. So – those people, these people that are adventuresome enough to like wine in the first place, are interested in learning more about the regions and more about the grapes. But people who present this information usually are just terrible. And they think that if you don't know it already, then there's something wrong with you. And that's not fair. I don't think that's fair.
And you're right. And I think a lot of people in the wine business start to talk over people, unintentionally a lot of times, but I think they talk over people. They talk down to them simply because they just don't understand the fact that most people don't know. A good example, I'm on lots of different blogs that I follow, and a month or so ago, there was a question on the blog, what is your favorite AVA? And people were throwing in, oh, I'm from this area, so that's my favorite, or I always frequent this, so that's my favorite. And I put on there, you know, that's a really snobby question, because most people don't even know what an AVA is.
Absolutely right.
You know, and so when you start talking about that, that's sort of an elitist type conversation. And at the winery, after I saw that question pop up, I'd had groups of people in there, and I'd ask. I said, how many people here know what an AVA is? And everybody would give me this blank look.
Oh, I bet almost no one.
No one. I mean, absolutely no one. And I teach a class every month, and I, you know, anywhere from 20 to 35 people in the class, and I always say, how many people know what an AVA is? And no one, you know. And it's just – that's just one good example of the wine industry and how we start – assuming people would understand this stuff because we know it, and so we start talking about it like they should know it too, and people don't. They don't know that stuff.
They don't, and the problem is that if you start treating a relatively intelligent person like they are a moron, and you start to ask them these, assume knowledge, which is usually what most of these wine people do. And this goes back to those distributor or the salespeople tasting that they have. Then people get accustomed to, okay, well, this is how a wine event goes. I sit here and I pretend that I know what I'm talking about, and maybe I look it up later, or maybe I ask a question that leads me to believe, and nobody ever gets a concise or clear answer because they're afraid to ask. And
right.
The reason they're afraid to ask is because the environment that is created in a lot of these classes or tastings or whatever it is not conducive to learning. And nobody wants to feel like an idiot when they are doing something, especially for leisure. I mean, this is supposed to be for fun. This is supposed to be a hobby. I don't really know anything else. I can't really think of anything else except maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe whiskey is like, or scotch is like this too, where people assume that you have some sort of level of knowledge about stuff. And I mean, you make wine. It's complex. This is not easy. It's not totally easy. So when someone starts to talk about aging things in a chestnut cask versus a small oak barrique that's lightly toasted or that's from Slovenian oak versus French oak, what? I mean, really, that's just not okay unless you really explain. There's no point in even explaining that unless you're going to explain why that matters, and nobody does.
And then even explaining it, though, doesn't really convey what it is. It's when you have a glass of wine in front of you and the person standing next to you across the table and you both pick it up and you sip on it and you go, do you taste that little bit of vanilla in that? Now, that's oak.
Right.
Then they understand. Then they can relate. Then they know what you're talking about. And it's back to the simplicity of it. We don't need to make it difficult. We need to say, this is what you're tasting here. And this is what, you know, you're going to find in this. And you smell that? That is from the grape, and that's going to be in all the Cabernets or whatever, you know, as examples. But,
right.
You know, if they look at it that way instead of, you know, and I think a lot of the wineries we talk to, a lot of the people we've talked to have been, you know, pretty knowledgeable, and they also talk about the people that come in and how they try to educate them. And I think that's great. But then again, we talk to a lot of small wineries, and, you know, that's just really one of the missions of the small wineries is to educate people so that they walk back in the door and buy another bottle of their wine.
Right. Absolutely. That and how much it also depends on venue and how receptive people are to learning in that specific environment. For instance, I think that Napa is a great example of this. There are a lot of people that go to Napa, which people refer to as adult Disneyland sometimes.
I do all the time.
And,
I do all the time, yeah.
Right? Well, what do you find when you go to Napa? It can be, especially in the summertime, in my opinion, it can be not necessarily people who are interested in learning about wine. It's extremely disrespectful sometimes to these wineries who are trying to educate you and want you to know about their individual wines, but people are there on Guzzle Fest. They want every single wine. They want to drink. If you make 10 wines, they want to drink those 10 wines, you know?
That's right.
And so that's not, as opposed to people who are really interested in learning, maybe want to pare it down to 4 wines, and they'd like to learn specifically about those 4 wines, and maybe, oh, gasp, they might actually even spit. So, you know, so they can taste what is available. So I think that there's a real difference. It's very, very hard, and some of the small wineries fall prey to this, and it's very disappointing for them because when, you know, the small wineries that I know and that I like to frequent, when you have to make an appointment a lot of times to see them. And
right.
When you do make the appointment with them, you're meeting with the winemaker or you're meeting with the only marketing person that they have. When they're not meeting with you, they're cleaning out a barrel. I mean, their resources are not plentiful, and these people really want to impress you, and they want to show you what they have, and they want to tell you their story. And if you're not receptive or open to that, it's better probably to go to a larger winery where they care a little bit less if you're going to guzzle down wine. So I think that the venue is people, you have to be receptive to it. So that's, for me, I really enjoy doing public speaking and I enjoy doing classes because it's people are there because they want to be there. They're there because they want to learn about wine. They know I'm a wine educator. They know that I have expertise in this field. They know that I'm a certified sommelier and a certified specialist of wine. They understand that what they're going to get is not a guzzle fest because I'm not selling wine and I'm not going to pour them too much wine. They don't get that much. So The point is to learn and to sit and to listen and absorb. So I prefer that because you know what you're getting.
And, you know, that's so true in the fact that the small wineries, we, you know, visit that again too. The small wineries are there, I think, more to educate you, to tell you about the wine, to tell you what's going on with it and all that. And, you know, if you walk out there saying, wow, this is a great wine and I enjoy this, and that could lead you to other things as opposed to the big areas where you go in and say, okay, I'm going to drive through Napa Valley or I'm going to drive through the Finger Lakes or I'm going to, you know, and just, you know, I had so many wines, I don't remember what I did at the end of the day. And I hear this a lot from people who say they've been to these different regions. And it's not wine tasting, it's drinking. You know?
It's drinking, right.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's an excellent and bold point to make because I think a lot of people go, I think Napa and to some extent Sonoma, but Napa is the place you're going to find this the most because they're all on Napa 29.
Right.
And so you never have to leave one road, and they've got a lot of coach services where you can just hire a bus or you can hire a driver for the day. And you see these people blotto. They're just getting off at these wineries, off these small buses or out of these limos, and they are just blotto.
Yeah.
And they are so drunk, they're never going to remember. And maybe they'll buy a bottle or two, but in the end, I think it's very hard. These wineries, even the large ones, really are proud of their product, and they would like to showcase it to people. So when people show up and they're just there to drink, I think it's hard. But you know what? It's part of being in the alcoholic beverage industry, I guess, that we are passionate about it, and we like educating people about it. But there's some people that just want to get drunk. So
want to drink, yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, and you find it all the time. Mike, do you have any questions for Elizabeth here while we got on? It is Elizabeth. You mentioned some other name just a second ago. Am I wrong?
No, it's me. No, Elizabeth.
Okay.
I was saying my husband's moniker is MC Ice, but mine is Elizabeth.
Okay.
All the way.
All right. Mike, do you have any questions for Elizabeth while we're going to move?
Yeah, you were talking about your podcast. How long does each podcast air? How long is it? Is it pre-recorded? Is it live? And how
they're
long
all,
are the shows?
Yeah. They're all pre-recorded because it's a downloadable podcast. So you know, you can go on iTunes and key in Wine for Normal People, and it will come up. They range, depends on the topic and how long we decide that we want to go. So some are 30 minutes, some are 45 minutes. We've done an hour before. It depends. Some of the interview shows sometimes turn into 45 minutes to an hour just because some of the guests are pretty awesome and we want to make sure that we give them full time. But it's not live. So there's a whole back catalog also available. So we have done
–
we are edging up. We just released episode 97. So there's almost 100 episodes to listen to. Lots of stuff.
Wow.
We've been doing it since 2011.
Very good.
Okay. How do you pronounce your – I saw this on your website. How do you pronounce your favorite wine to say? I looked at it, and I was like, that looks like I could do it, but I'm not even going to – no.
Oh, you have to try. I even put in Chassagne Monrachet.
The what?
Chassagne Monrachet. Try it. Come on, Mike. Help me out.
I'm having microphone issues. I don't think it's going to come out anyway.
It's a Chardonnay. It's a Chardonnay from Burgundy. It's a lovely wine.
And they sell that in the States, or is it, is this something local?
They sell it all over. It's a white Burgundy, which is white Burgundy is always the Chardonnay grape. It's extremely minerally. but it's got nice fruit flavor, some citrus fruit, and sometimes some apple fruit, depending on the vintage, how ripe it is, and just a tiny touch of oak, but nothing like what you'd find in a California Chardonnay at all. So very interesting wine and very food friendly.
Okay. And do you have any information on when we can expect your book to be on the shelves? Is it going to be in print or digital download or both?
Well, we haven't decided yet. I think there will definitely be an option to buy it in a physical form. So, I'm still finishing up the first draft, which has taken a long time. But it will be called Wine for Normal People, and it is basically a guide to all sorts of things that are basic to wine that people need to know from a very frank, honest perspective. Got lots of anecdotes, some of which I shared tonight, but some of which, you know, from inside the industry and things that people have told me that I imagine that other people have heard before that are not true or that are not presented very nicely. So I try to just make it all fit together. And so there's stuff on grapes, on regions, on gadgets, on how to order wine in a restaurant, wine etiquette, pairing, all of that kind of stuff. And a lot of the pairing stuff is very scientific. It's based on research from scientists, taste research and stuff like that. So I'm kind of a nerd like that. I like to get into that because I think that's important.
Yeah, sounds awesome. Okay, that was it. I was just you have an incredible website. I mean, it looks great. If anybody out there currently tuned in want to go to wineformnormalpeople.com and take a look, it's really well done and very nicely organized. So check it out. And all the links are there as well for your Facebook, Twitter, and looks like you're on YouTube also. So, yeah, check it out.
Yeah, YouTube, and I'm going to be releasing more YouTube videos in short order here. And then also, the blog is on wineformnormalpeople.com/blog, and I've been blogging since 09. So lots of information and material there, and links to all the podcasts are all there too. So I think wineformnormalpeople.com is definitely the one-stop shop.
Excellent. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Is the new edition going to delay the book any?
No, I don't. I don't stop for anything. I just keep going.
There'll
I did
be
the first
two
time
now.
I had my daughter in 2011, and we were recording the podcast 2 days, not 2 days, maybe 2 weeks later. So it doesn't stop. It never stops. We just keep going. And I'm hoping to get get the first draft done by the time that the kid is due. So we'll see how it goes.
When is that, if I may?
The beginning of April.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I'm on the home stretch. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. You are. Yeah. So there'll be plenty of time to get the book out there and all that.
Absolutely.
And I did
drink throughout my pregnancy in moderation, in case you were wondering. And we're
have you heard about the new study? There is a new study Denmark did a study that 5 years 5 years ago they did 300,000 pregnant women, and they had a control group. Yeah, the control group, and then they had a group that drank two glasses of wine per week, not in the first trimester, but in the second, third trimester. They followed up 5 years later with them. 100,000 responded on the follow-up. They lost two-thirds of them. But they found that the children of the mothers who drank a glass of wine twice a week had better social skills, had better test scores and remembering things, cognitive test scores. They had better scores in all sorts of stuff. It just, and they attribute it to the fact that they the mothers had wine during the pregnancy.
Well, this has been substantiated in a number of studies. So this is, and of course they'd never do them in the United States because we're too afraid about liability, but there was one in the UK that was done also that sort of pointed towards that. There's been a bunch of studies over the course of years about kids who come from moms who have it totally in moderation, of course, a couple glasses of wine a week, and it's all substantiated with what you're saying. Now, some people say that it's potentially cultural because these people who are drinking during their pregnancies are much more, tend to be more educated in some ways because they know it's okay or they're making informed decisions, or they're wine drinkers, which do tend to skew a little bit on the higher income side. But that being said, I mean, it doesn't really matter why, but it definitely, a lot of arrows point to the fact that it's okay. So that's what everybody has to make a personal decision about this. It's not something that, you know, I mean, I'm no doctor, so I have no idea, but
yeah,
and I'm
me
sure
either.
That there are people with horrible stories, so I'm never going to make a recommendation that somebody should do that. Totally personal and totally has to do with your comfort level, but it seems that it's less of a taboo than I think what a lot of people think. So it is what it is. I think,
yeah,
my decision, given what I do, I really didn't have much of a choice, so I just kept going.
Yeah.
But in much more moderation than I did before. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, that's good. Let me quickly hear AFRN. For those of you who are listening to us, be sure to tune in. Check out Elizabeth's website. And Mike just gave you the information there. Check out the website. Check out the stuff. Watch for the book coming out. And thanks for tuning in, AFRN. So you keep mentioning New York. Are you going to look at the future of going back up there and expanding what you're doing, or are you just going to continue with the podcast and the speaking engagements and stuff?
Well, I mean, the hope is that eventually – I'm actually just venturing in right now into online wine classes as well. So actually, that's another – I should let people know. I'm offering – and this is really great for people who are in areas where there is not a lot of wine education, and the only events that are available are events that are put on by wine shops and restaurants and wine distributors essentially. So I have started doing online wine classes, and those are education-focused. They're live. They're via Google Hangout. I send materials ahead of time. I have I can't – because of all the stuff that we're talking about with shipping, you can't ship wine to people, but I can tell you which wines to buy, and then we can all taste together and talk about taste profiles and what you're supposed to find when you look at these types of wines. So that is a big initiative for me because it goes along with trying to help people learn more, especially people who don't have access, learn more. Do I think I would move back up to New York? I don't know. I mean, it depends, you know, if the book takes off and it turns out that, you know, I need to be in a place where there's lots of media center, you know, there's lots of stuff that I need to be doing. Yeah, I would definitely consider that, but it doesn't, you know, I think that in a world of an online business, essentially, and I think that for me, since I'm trying to reach as many people as possible to try to help spread wine around and help educate people and make them feel good about wine, this can all be done online, so I could live in Timbuktu and still do it as long as I have an internet connection.
Yeah, that's true. But in Timbuktu, though, you won't have access to all the wines that you like to buy, so you won't do that.
Yeah. Probably not. More like Bergen. Maybe Bergen.
Yeah, there you go. So, any other comments here at the end? It's always funny because you told me, I don't know, I might only have, you know, 20 minutes, half hour to talk about stuff, but you have a lot of stuff a lot of interesting stories there, so I'm glad you spent the time with us this evening. Any last thoughts, any last comments?
No, I don't have any. I really appreciate you having me on the program. This was really fun, and I think that it's great that what we do complements one another, so I hope that some of your listeners will check out the podcast and the blog and all the Wine for Normal People stuff, and, you know, the same with my listeners. So thank
you
so much for having me.
I'll tell you what, toward the end of the year, let's have you back on the program again after your book is released, and we'll do another promo, another program on the book, and you can tell us more about the book and the release and all that.
Oh, I really appreciate that. That would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We'll look forward to that. Let's get some contact. Give all the information that would you like to give out now. Again, your Twitter account, your Facebook, your everything. The whole kit and caboodle, yes.
Well, the podcast is Wine for Normal People, available on any podcast player and on iTunes especially, which is the easiest way to find us. We are winefornormalpeople.com. If you don't remember anything else, all the information that I'm about to tell you is there. Facebook, Wine for Normal People, and Twitter is @normalwine. We're also on Pinterest, Wine for Normal People, and the Wine for Normal People channel on YouTube, which will soon be expanding. There's a few videos up there, but there will be more coming shortly.
Fantastic. And the class online, do you have information on your website about that?
That is going up soon. It's actually available on a kind of a funny website, so I'm going to give you the link, but I will. It's tugboatyards.com/wine for normal people. I'm doing it through a third party that can facilitate it. But yes, that will be on the website really soon, so look out for that within the next week. That's actually on my to-do list of things to put on. But yes, the online class will be up there. Very, very easy. Just have to get the scheduling right because of different time zones. But there will always be multiple slots available, and usually the classes will be taking place on the weekends and potentially after work for some people if they can't make it on the weekends. So should be a home run. Very, very easy. It's an hour-long class, and all you need is an internet connection and access to a computer.
Fantastic. Sounds like a great idea and a lot of fun. So, Elizabeth, thank you very much, and I will make a note here. We will be in touch with you October or November, let's say sometime in November, and we'll get you on. We'll talk about your book and all that good stuff and remind people that it's out there and see how life is going for you at that time.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great conversation.
Yeah,
great.
It was
a lot
of fun. Thank you. Very knowledgeable, and it was great. I enjoyed it. I'm sure everyone out there did. And we'll look forward to talking to you in November, and good luck with the baby.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Whoops. Well, that was quick. I hit the X button on there. That was fantastic.
Yeah, she's knowledgeable. She and I talked this afternoon, and she said, we're a lot alike in what we're trying to show people here. And we really are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the program All About Wine is trying to, basically trying to make wine less intimidating and more friendly. And that's just what she's doing. Wine for Normal People is doing the exact same thing, trying to get people educated in it and not be afraid of wine. And I think it's a great concept. And she's going at it a very nice way, too. So, great. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I was going through my emails to see, I take it there's nothing going on at the winery this weekend, or did I miss the,
because
it was last weekend. Okay.
It was last weekend, it'll be next weekend.
Okay.
Not
this
weekend.
I thought I had something come in for that, but I guess, I don't know. All right, very cool. So we have, I guess I lost my page, what I was writing.
Yeah, I have nothing this weekend. We do have the wineries open, though, for tastings and if somebody wants to bring out a picnic and set out in the backyard. It's supposed to be beautiful Saturday, so good chance to do it.
Yeah, it's a little cool today or tomorrow, but then we're going to get back into the usual Florida weather. If you're in Georgia, speaking of Georgia, stuck in that awful weather, come on down to Florida. I saw a picture on, was it Facebook or something, of a snowman on the side of the road holding a sign, and it said Florida, like they say, like going to Florida, pick me up or something. And I thought that was pretty cool. And you saw the picture of the weather with the wine bottles in different regions, like
that's
one wine bottle, two wine bottles.
Yeah, that's great. We need to incorporate that in all weather systems. I mean, if you have a storm coming, this is a three-bottle storm. I mean, it's just start making that part of the language.
That's right. should be a regular part of any forecast. Sunny,
that's right.
Come on down and enjoy wine. So there you go.
You like to check it out, sign up for our Facebook page. There's mm-hmm. a picture of that little map on the Facebook page. It's pretty cute. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's going to close the show for this week, unless you have any last-minute things to discuss. I don't have any.
No, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the drought in California, and mm-hmm. they got some rains and they got some snows, but it's, you know, not enough. It's good to see it happen, but they said it dumped 2 feet of snow into the mountains. They need about 10, 20 times that to really make a difference. So it helps a little bit, but they're not out of the woods, so to speak. They still need a lot more rain there. So we're still looking, although some reports I'm seeing saying that the crop from last year or from, the 2013 crop should be pretty decent. They're saying it was a pretty nice crop. So, but still, California drought is still a problem. And so,
That's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, that is. That's tough, not just on grapevines, but everything out there. Yeah.
All righty. I guess we will be back next Thursday, which is February the 20th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the live show. And anytime, of course, when it gets converted over to the podcast and put on iTunes and everything as a free download. So we will go ahead and close the show out for this evening and for this week, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Thank you for tuning in, as always, and big pleasure. Oh, I saw the little
happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Look at that.
We got a chocolate and red wine. Try it tomorrow. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Spice wine. Yep.
Yeah.
But if you have to work though, and see Ron, that's what's not fair. I can't go to work and drink wine. To work and it's like nothing. You know, it's like what's up with that? How many places can you go to and say, yeah, I think I'm gonna have a thing over at, you know, whatever.
Not
okay,
too many.
That's fine. No.
not too many.
You have your privileges there. So.
That's right. It's a perk. That is a perk of the job. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So I'm not going to drink any wine until the evening time when I get off work. But unfortunately, I can't do that at work. So we'll see you all again. Yeah, here we are talking. Have a good rest. Have a good week.
Have a good week, everyone. Topic. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, have a good week. Yeah, thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next time. Thank you. Where's my button? There we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.